Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Zenzation Salad. Only at Zaxby's.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. As we're nearing the end of Chapter 5, you're probably thinking that things are about to wind down. In fact, you've probably read this chapter many times, maybe. And you might be thinking, okay, we've gotten through Bilbo encountering Gollum. I almost said meeting, but it's not really a meeting. It's an encounter. And Bilbo accidentally finding the ring, the riddle game, the slipping on of the ring on the finger, and the chase up back through the mountain. So you might be thinking, hey, that's probably it. From this point on, it's all downhill or uphill and downhill on occasion, depending on how the caves wind through the mountain. But there's more to it. Of course there's more to it. If you've been listening to this show and if you've been reading J.R.R. Tolkien, you know that there is more, that Tolkien is not done foreshadowing or setting up things for the future. In a few different ways, we get in this next set of pages the first time that the ring tries to betray Bilbo. But even more interestingly, we have a situation that Gollum goes through, a very specific situation and a mistake that he makes that he will not make a second time. We'll also see once again how Tolkien manages to ramp up the tension. He understands how to build a climactic event, even when it just has to do with Bilbo escaping a cave. So welcome back, friends. Let's get into the details. So the previous episode ended with, so they came to a dead stop. Gollum had brought Bilbo to the way out after all. But Bilbo could not get in. There was Gollum sitting humped up right in the opening, and his eyes gleamed cold in his head as he swayed it from side to side between his knees. And I didn't go over the details on just the stance that Gollum was in right here. This idea that he's sitting back on the flats of his feet with his knees up and his head between them. This is a stance that is very common in many places in the world. And I call it a stance. I'm not sure exactly what to call it because it's this thing that you can do as a child that if you continue doing through adulthood, you would maintain the I don't know, the limberness of your legs in order to be able to do that. It's something that's much more common in places outside of the Western world. And here, Gollum is able to do this. He's able to sit kind of on the flats of his feet, if that's what it's called, and yet peer out into the darkness, looking for Bilbo. And so Bilbo is creeping more quietly than a mouse, it says. But immediately, Gollum stiffens and sniffs, and we're told that his eyes went green. And again, that green color, as I've noted before, I believe, is out of jealousy. He knows that Bilbo took his precious, the one thing that he cares about, and he is desperate to get it back and jealous that somebody else would even put their hands on it. This paragraph gives us some very interesting details. It treats Gollum as if he is a beast on the hunt. He knows that he can't see Bilbo, so he's using his hearing and his smell. He seems to be crouching and crawling around on the floor, thrusting his head out and his nose almost to the stone. We're getting pictures of a hunting dog looking for its prey. And yet, Bilbo is hard to find. Bilbo in this scene is also given some descriptions that allow us to understand that he can see or feel that Gollum was tense as a bowstring, gathering for a spring. Now, this is interesting here. This sentence says Bilbo could see or feel. It is not definite. It does not tell us that Bilbo is actually seeing Gollum or actually feeling. Now, feel is a strange word, and you might be wondering, why am I making such a big deal of this? Feel in this sense is not the sense of like he put his hand on Gollum's back and felt that he was tense. No, he was not actually feeling Gollum. This is a psychological feel. This is a sense that there is danger looming ahead of you. It's that feeling of when you walk into a dark room and all of a sudden something's wrong, or somebody's mood has shifted and yet you haven't looked at them yet, and you just get this feeling, something about the situation is telling you beyond the senses that you would normally rely on, that something is about to happen, that something is wrong. Both of them are reaching out with all of their senses in order to survive the situation and get what they want. Gollum, the ring, Bilbo, to escape. And then we get this. And I'm going to read this entire paragraph. Usually I pull out little snippets, but let's go through the entire paragraph and then we're going to back up through it again. Check this out. Bilbo almost stopped breathing and went stiff himself. He was desperate. He must get away out of this horrible darkness while he had any strength left. He must fight. He must stab the foul thing, put its eyes out, kill it. It meant to kill him. No, not a fair fight. He was invisible now. Gollum had no sword. Gollum had not actually threatened to kill him or tried to yet. And he was miserable, alone, lost. A sudden understanding, a pity mixed with horror, welled up in Bilbo's heart. A glimpse of endless unmarked days, without light or hope of betterment. Hard stone, cold fish, sneaking and whispering. All these thoughts passed in a flash of a second. He trembled. And then quite suddenly, in another flash, as if lifted by a new strength and resolve, he leapt. Now for our story and the stories that come after this, The Lord of the Rings and each of those books as they were set up, they're multiple books in three volumes. This is one of the most important events in the entire story. This is one of the most important events that happens in The Hobbit. The situation here allows Gollum to survive. Bilbo could have murdered Gollum right here in order to get out, in order to make sure that he doesn't follow him, in order to protect himself, and yet he doesn't. Now, what's even more interesting here is two things. First of all, Bilbo's sudden change of heart. Is that because Bilbo was a good person? Is it because Bilbo was raised well? Because he had an understanding that sometimes you have to pity people who seem like they're evil. People who do terrible things are often the victims of their own decisions or circumstances. Sometimes they lose control, and sometimes they are in fact suffering, and that's why they strike out at other people. Was this something that was already inside Bilbo that was welling to the surface? Something that he saw in Gollum that reminded him to take pity on those who are suffering? Or is this one of those moments where something from beyond reaches down into the world and imbues it with just a little bit more than was already there, gives it a nudge? And there might be some evidence for this as well. The fact that this is such a sudden turn. I mean, look at the text. It says, he must stab the foul thing, put its eyes out, kill it. It meant to kill him. And then immediately, no, not a fair fight. He was invisible now. Gollum had no sword. He had not actually threatened to kill him or tried yet. All of a sudden, that turn of attention, going from not just wanting to kill him, but to stab his eyes out, that is a very violent thing to think about doing, to all of a sudden turn to thinking about the ways that Gollum was suffering and a justification for why stabbing him right here would be the wrong thing to do. Again, did that come up from inside Bilbo himself, or did that come down from Iluvatar? And there's another hint here as well. When you get all the way to the end of it, one of the things that Bilbo was worried about was the limitations of his strength. He was worn out. This had been a very long day. He hasn't eaten anything. He is tired or exhausted even. He wants to get out before he runs out of steam. And yet, at the end of this paragraph, we get all these thoughts passed in a flash of a second, very, very quickly. It's not like he was spending a lot of time contemplating this. Then we get this. He trembled, and then quite suddenly, in another flash, as if lifted by a new strength and resolve, he leapt. Where did that strength come from? Again, this is not clear by any means. It could have welled up from inside of him. He could have been motivated to make the right decision here and to jump over Gollum. Or that strength could have been imbued in him from an outside source that was willing him to make the right decision here, was empowering him to do the right thing, because that outside source knew how the story was supposed to go. I'm not sure we will ever know for sure, but it's so fun to me that we have a situation like this where it is ambiguous. Now, I mentioned that there's a second piece here. Then you might be thinking, what else is going on here? We've just read through this paragraph twice. It's Bilbo debating what to do with Gollum. It's potentially Eru Iluvatar reaching into the world, inspiring him, or he is inspiring himself, or whatever. But what's even more interesting here is that in this moment, the ring is on his finger. If at any moment he would be tempted to make an evil or terrible decision, something that would come back to haunt him, it would be now. The ring is on his finger. You would think that it might be influencing him to do something terrible. Something dark, like stabbing his eyes out. In fact, maybe that's where that feeling comes from at the beginning. But if that's the case, then the ring is hushed. Now, maybe that's the resilience of hobbits. Maybe it's Eru Iluvatar? We will never know. But that makes this decision to have Pity even more interesting, because the ring would have fought against that decision, unless the ring knew that this was the only way to get out. But how would the ring know that? You would think the ring would take the shortest distance between two things. Stab the creature in front of you, get out of the cave, get back out into the real world, and just make it work. But that's not what happens here. It's not how this plays out. So let's read the very next paragraph, and let me know what you think about this. It says, "No great leap for a man, but a leap in the dark." Okay, that feels like the moon landing to me, but this was written before that. And then it goes, "Straight over Gollum's head he jumped, 7 feet forward and 3 in the air. Indeed, had he known it, he only just missed cracking his skull on the low arch of the passage." We just talked about how tired Bilbo was, and yet he's able to leap 7 feet and 3 feet in the air. He's a hobbit. A grown adult would have a hard time making that leap. But yet, he does it here in a dark cave, exhausted and scared, and yet he leaps 7 feet forward and 3 feet in the air. And then we get this. "Gollum threw himself backwards and grabbed as the hobbit flew over him, but too late, his hands snapped on thin air, and Bilbo, falling fair on his sturdy feet, sped off down the new tunnel." This is one of the scenes that is, again, so important to the way things play out in these stories. The first is Bilbo taking pity on Gollum. We're reminded of that in the future when it comes to Gandalf and Frodo. But this scene right here, and it's, I guess it's all part of the same scene, but this individual section of the scene where Gollum tries to grab at an invisible hobbit who happens to be wearing the ring at the time, this is practice for what will happen later. And it didn't dawn on me until this reading that this is a situation that Gollum will find himself in again at the crack of Mount Doom with Frodo, when Frodo finally falls to the influence of the ring, which is inevitable. We've talked about this. And he puts the ring on. And in that scene, Gollum smacks Sam on the back of the head and knocks him out. And then the next thing we know, he is on top of an individual who is invisible, who happens to be Frodo, and struggling to get the ring off of his finger. In this situation, Gollum misses jumping, pouncing on an invisible hobbit. Yet the next time this happens, he does not fail. And I'm going to dig into that a little bit more in the bonus episode this week. But the most important thing to take away here, if you're not a subscriber on Patreon, is that this happens here and Gollum fails. And yet the next time it happens, he doesn't fail. And yet he still fails after that. But that's more to talk about later. The scene continues on, and we get this little line here. "He did not turn to see what Gollum was doing. There was a hissing and cursing, almost at the heels at first. Then it stopped." The text talks about how Gollum is shrieking and he's full of hatred and despair. And then it specifically says Gollum was defeated. He dared go no further. You would think a creature who loves only one thing in the world, who also needs it to survive, would dare going out and braving the goblins or the outdoors. But no, he can't do it. He inherently is a coward. And he's afraid. And it takes him 2 more years to convince himself to leave the cave.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
And then we get this very interesting line. It's about Gollum's shriek, his cry when he gives up, and Bilbo's reaction. It says, "The cry brought Bilbo's heart to his mouth, but he still held on." What does that mean? To me, that means that feeling you get when you feel kind of bad about something. When you, I think it's the pity. It's the pain and the suffering and the pity in Gollum's voice, or for Gollum's cry, that Bilbo is feeling here. He genuinely feels for Gollum, even though Gollum's a villain and would have murdered him and probably eaten him and all of that. Bilbo still retains his humanity. And maybe that's from himself, and maybe it's from an external source, making it feel stronger than it would naturally. But if it is Bilbo himself, then that is a testament to Bilbo's character. And I think that's probably the more likely version of the events here. It's the one that puts Bilbo in the best light, to say that that was foundationally who he was, and like his own success in the situation and the success of the, you know, the adventure in The Lord of the Rings and getting rid of the ring and evil destroying itself and all of that is contingent on this decision, and that that is all Bilbo's responsibility. I feel like that's the better answer, but again, we may never know. And then we get, of course, the classic line, "Thief, thief, thief, Baggins, we hates it, we hates it, we hates it forever." And something that has always hit me a little bit odd about this line is worth discussing here. Gollum says, "We hates it." And my default understanding of this, and maybe this is something based on the culture we live in, the time that we live in, is the use of the word "it." "We hates it, we hates it forever." My default is to think of that as gendered, that for some reason he's not saying "we hates you" or "we hates him." You know, "you" isn't gendered, but "him" would be. But I don't think that's the case. Gollum would have been able to tell that Bilbo looked like a he, him, and would have just assumed that, especially as this was written in the 1930s. But I don't think this is a gender thing. This is what happens often when we substitute "it" for a creature that isn't a person. Sometimes, for example, you'll come across an animal in the wild, and you may even be able to tell what sex that animal is, but you still call it an "it" because it's not a human. It is a different animal. "Oh, look at it," when pointing at the dog, that sort of thing. I think that's what we're getting here, is that Gollum isn't 100% sure what Bilbo is. Even though Gollum came from kind of a proto-hobbit background, he hasn't really ever met somebody that looks like Bilbo. And he's also spent a very long time only interacting with goblins, well, eating and attacking them. So it's more of a "it" in the fact that it is a different species and he doesn't really care about genderizing that, if that makes sense. So the situation moves on and Bilbo is making his way out through the cave, now feeling like Gollum isn't following him, and he feels pretty safe about this. But of course, there are still goblins to deal with, and the struggles of making his way through the cave. It's noted here that he stubbed his poor toes again several times on the jagged, you know, stones on the floor. And then we're told, a bit low for goblins, at least for the big ones, thought Bilbo. And then we're given some more insight into goblins. Even the big ones go at fast speeds, these great speeds, stooping low, with their hands almost on the ground. Again, imagery that makes us think of beasts more than people. Then the passage is described as sloping down and then up again. We get this kind of winding up and down as Bilbo is unsure if he's actually making his way out to the surface. But then we get a light, a glimpse of light, not red light as a fire or lantern, but a pale out of doors sort of light. And Bilbo began to run. And he's going as fast as he can. And he gets to what looks like a door, a great door, a stone door. And I have to wonder, was this a door created by the goblins? I would assume so. We have already seen stone doors that work on some sort of mechanism that allow them to hide behind what seems like a small cave entrance on the other side. Now, Bilbo blinks and then sees the goblins here. We're told goblins in full armor with drawn swords sitting just inside the door. It appears that they have been, well, brought to awareness that something is going on, maybe by the shrieking of Gollum, maybe by the recent, you know, problem with the dwarves escaping, but they are ready. And what seemed like the climax of the scene, like it had already happened, but it hadn't. This is now the climax of the scene. Tolkien has realized that he needs to build the stakes because Bilbo is still not out of this. Gollum was scary, but what might be even scarier is being found by what is effectively an army of goblins. And yet, the ring here decides to betray him for the first time. So it's ramping up the tension again. They saw him sooner than he saw them. Yes, they saw him. Whether it was an accident or a last trick of the ring before it took a new master, it was not on his finger. With yells of delight, the goblins rushed upon him. Now, I talked before about how the ring has been wanting to leave the cave, so why would it, at this moment, slip off of his finger? Well, if the ring made its way to the goblins, then maybe that's a faster way back to somebody who used to be their dark lord. Or maybe already was again. And then we get this very interesting line. Now note that Bilbo has only had this ring for a very short while, and yet we get this line here. A pang of fear and loss, like an echo of Gollum's misery, smote Bilbo. He is already feeling withdrawal symptoms from the fear of losing the ring. And he slips his hand in his pocket. Sure enough, the ring is still there. It slipped off while it was in his pocket, which is also interesting. We didn't get any details about him putting his hands in his pocket as he was trying to make his way through the caves, but that must have been the case. And he slips it back on. And then, of course, the goblins have a hard time finding him. They're shouting all sorts of different things. They're looking all over the place. And Bilbo makes his way closer and closer to the doors to get out. But he has to get past these goblins. Bilbo was dreadfully frightened, but he had a sense to understand what had happened and to sneak behind a big barrel that they were using as a drink. And then we get this little passage here. It says, "I must get to the door. I must get to the door," he kept saying to himself, but it was a long time before he ventured to try. Then it was like a horrible game of blind man's bluff. Now, I've noted some of the anachronisms in the story before, and I would imagine that blind man's bluff isn't an ancient game that was played by hobbits, although it could be. This is more likely a in-universe concept of like a later addition by an editor, that sort of thing. But who knows? Maybe blind man's bluff is something that hobbits were playing way, way, way back in the Third Age of our world, from the perspective of this being, you know, the history of our own world. And then we get this. The place was full of goblins running about, and the poor little hobbit dodged this way and that, was knocked over by a goblin who could not make out what he bumped into. Now, this scene doesn't play out in Peter Jackson's Hobbit movies, but it very well could have, because the situation here with, you know, Bilbo trying to sneak past goblins and then bumbling around feels like it would be something that would fit directly into the way that he plays out the rest of the scenes with the goblins. But he doesn't. And then we get this. He scrambled on all fours, slipped between the legs of the captain just in time, got up and ran for the door. It feels absolutely like something they would have put in the movies, but I think they probably streamlined this section so that it wasn't going to take away from the already built tension that was going on. And then we get Bilbo getting to the door and he gets stuck in the door and then his buttons get caught. And then there's this shadow that is coming from the light of the door. And remember, we were told this earlier, that even when wearing the ring, the sun could reveal through this kind of weird view of the invisible creature. It's not fully invisible. And then it still kind of casts a bit of a shadow. That's what's happening here. And the goblins notice this and they can't understand it, but they're like, oh, there must be something outside. Maybe it's over there. And then Bilbo squirms and he makes his way through the door by forcing himself through, again, using the last of his strength. And the buttons pop off of both his waistcoat, his vest — we would call it a vest today, most of us, at least in the US, and his jacket. The buttons pop off. And maybe this is done for comedic effect, but I think that there's a second thing happening here. By popping the buttons off of his vest and his jacket, he's not as civilized as he was before. He doesn't look like somebody who fits in a, you know, I guess a little version of England, which is what the Shire looks like, walking around in his fancy clothes and being civilized. He looks like somebody who might have been wandering around in the wilderness for a while. The feelings and emotional situations that he has gone through in this dire situation with goblins and Gollum is now visualized. He comes out of this situation looking worn down. He's bearing that visually for us by losing his buttons. And then we get the final paragraph of this chapter. Of course, they soon came down after him, hooting and hollowing, not hollering, hollowing, and hunting among the trees. But they don't like the sun. It makes their legs wobble and their heads giddy. They could not find Bilbo with the ring on, slipping in and out of the shadows of the trees, running quick and quiet, and keeping out of the sun. So soon they went back, grumbling and cursing, to guard the door. Bilbo had escaped. And normally I would just leave this as the end of the episode, the last few lines here. But there is one more thing I want to point out. The fact that Bilbo understood that he had to keep out of the sun is important. Any creature who is going to use the ring and the ring turns them invisible is going to have to keep out of the sun. They're going to be directed to the shadows, to dark places. That is the nature of this. And it's insidious. It's not like the ring is telling them, hey, you should go hide in the shadows. They have figured out that that is the functional use of the ring. It is in its design something that guides its user to dark places, to being alone. That's part of the nature of the ring. And Bilbo is already feeling its effects. So it's so fun to be back talking about The Hobbit again after a few weeks of doing some other stuff and kind of taking some time off. I'm excited for 2025, and I'm also excited about all of our new members. So many of you have signed up over the last few weeks. So a big shout out to all of these new members. Thank you for joining us. Bereaver1989, Cobus D, we'll just call you Cobus D. I'm trying to make sure, I'm not sure, I'm not always 100% sure what the last names are or if they are actual real names or not, but I'm doing my best. Chris C, Dakota C, Caleb L, Luke G, Ginger Fury, Carolina F, Cell Sword G, David L, Alish M, and Johannes Z. Man, so many names. Thank you so much for being here. I'm glad that you've decided to join us. I hope you're enjoying all the different things that you get for supporting the show. And I really do appreciate the support. I'm sure we've got a lot of other stuff to get through this year. The rest of The Hobbit, maybe even starting on the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. We'll see when we get there. Also, I have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Here we go. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Atlee Morton, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D,
Courtney S., Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., David M., Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B., Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huon Is My Hero, Gemma D., Jezzer, Katie S., Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Nick K., Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J., Rivqua, Rosie Rosé, The Silly Marillion, I almost messed that one up, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much for all of your support. Also, we have some new reviews that came in the last few weeks. This one says, my first podcast by Big Lauer. And they go on and say, I've been in the car with friends or family when they've listened to podcasts, but I never went out to find my own until a couple weeks ago. I found this podcast and I am hooked. I listen to it every chance I get. It's very educational, but also very emotional. Every episode is worthwhile, especially the bonus episodes. Thank you for creating a work of absolute art. It is truly amazing. Well, thank you so much. This one is from Jahon Alvizo, I probably messed that up, who writes, amazing, just found this podcast. I wanted to learn more about the Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings, and this is perfect. Well, thanks for that. And then we have Chaplain Edwards, who writes, Silmarillion made clear. I have twice been unsuccessful in reading the Silmarillion. I've often given up in frustration over the names and meanings. This podcast has been a welcome study guide for my endeavor. Well worth the time to listen. Thanks so much for that. And then The Celestial writes, give me the lore, smiley face. Great podcast. It's very easy to just pick an episode and listen to it and even do some notes while the podcast is running if you want to. Me and my friends love discussing Lord of the Rings, and it's great to be able to know the history fast and well. Thank you for this amazing podcast. Stay hungry for lore, folks. Well, thank you so much, everybody, and I really do appreciate all the support. Just a reminder, if you do leave a review on Apple Podcasts with 5 stars, I will read it out, but I can only see the US ones right now. The app I was using that consolidated everything from everywhere is no longer a thing. So until I find a good solution for that, I can only see the US ones. But if you do live somewhere else, I still appreciate it. I really do. And if you listen on another platform, any of that stuff, absolutely, it helps a ton. So thanks for being here. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, and I'll see you next time as we start Chapter 6. All right. Stay safe out there, and I don't know, don't worry too much about the buttons. Just get through the door. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio. Or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Zenzation Salad, only at Zaxby's.